This program comes from Petersburg Flower Farm, with delivery of fresh bouquets available. Open noon to 5, Friday through Sunday at 6 Rory's Road. More information at 907-518-4363 or Petersburg Flower Farm on Facebook.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pig. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Good afternoon, Petersburg. Here we are on a wet, kind of cold afternoon to talk about gardening and wrapping up your garden and what to do for the fall. A couple of people have seen sandhill cranes. I haven't, but I'm got my ears peeled to hear them going over the creek and kind of look forward to seeing them every year. So today I'm joined in the studio here with Deborah Hurley, my co-host, and today our guest is Gina Esposito. And Gina's been a longtime gardener here in Petersburg, and somebody that we dealt with out at the flower farm quite a bit and enjoyed. So thank you for being on here today with us.
Yeah, thanks. Happy to be here.
So we went to Gina's place yesterday, and the first thing you drive up, and there's really a big royal maple, the dark red maple that she has in her yard, crab apple trees, and an apple tree. And what really struck me was it's got some nice ripening apples on it, red apples, and it's unprotected. And it's like, whoa, What kind of judo do you have that keeps the deer off that tree?
Oh, that's just pure neglect. I don't do anything. I guess it's just luck because or they just get, you know, into my other stuff and they get distracted by all my other stuff. But no, I don't really do anything with that. We just popped it there after it was given to us by a friend, and it you know, happens to fruit, and we use some of that. We use the apples, you know, for one little thing of hand pies every fall. But yeah, no, I don't do anything with it. I don't even really feed it or anything. Uh-huh. It could be doing a lot better, I'm sure.
Oh, it's doing great. I think it likes that spot. It gets enough sun, and yeah. You've got a crab apple real close to it, so it gets pollinated.
Yeah.
And that. And so the, after that, she's got a couple of beds in front of the house, and has rhododendrons and blue poppies, oriental poppies, and really a nice display of hanging baskets. And we were talking that hanging baskets around town, downtown, and hers are still looking like, wow, they're really looking full and good. And it might not have been the hottest or sunniest summer, but I think that's kind of helped the baskets last throughout the season, and they looked really full and bright and colorful.
Thanks.
And they take a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I kind of over the years have, you know, figured out the ones that have the least maintenance, just because I get busy. I think we all get busy, and the deadheading and all that stuff is just gets tedious. And so I just get ones that I try to get ones that don't, it don't need a lot of my attention.
Right. Yeah.
And I do use Miracle-Gro on them a lot in the summer, which I think, you know, helps. And I use that on nasturtiums. I have nasturtiums in my front window boxes, and I do use Miracle-Gro on them. I know some people say not to, but I always do because I love the nasturtium leaves just as much as the flowers, because they're just so, like, when they're dark and lush,
yeah.
I just love them.
And, you know, Jesse, who used to be the city gardener here, I'm sure he had a better title than that. But anyway, he grew nasturtiums down at the Sons of Norway Park.
These are gorgeous.
And he's the same thing. I don't know that he used Miracle-Gro per se, but he did use a fertilizer.
Yeah.
And they do like it.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I use on those.
Uh-huh.
So heading around to the back of the house, we came around and she has a chicken coop and a garden and a greenhouse in the back. And she had 6 chickens. They're in their second year of laying. And she's just started to put the light on them. And that's to do what?
Yeah, the light is keeping the light on them when the darker months keeps them laying. I think some folks think or have asked me is if they stop laying when it gets cold. And no, they can continue laying when it's cold. They just need the light to keep laying. They'll kind of go a little bit dormant if it gets too dark.
They get too moody, too.
Yeah, too moody, just like us. So I need that, like, sad light on them. And then in the winter, I put, like, Christmas lights out there. So it's, like, little party lights for the chickens. And so, I mean, I don't know. It's more for me than them, but it is kind of fun to see them.
Yeah.
With the Christmas lights all around them.
And if you're going to have a garden and a greenhouse, having a ready supply of chicken manure is really nice. And I see that you don't put the manure directly on your beds because sometimes chicken manure is a little too hot for plants, but putting it in your compost.
Yes. Yeah, and we have several compost piles going so that you are, you know, giving it plenty of time over the year and then the next year to break down.
And moving on to the greenhouse, about 10 by 20, it's got a wood frame, an Alexan roof, and used windows for the sides. How did that work out?
It's great that we found the windows for free. It ended up being about 12 by 12. It's not 20 feet. I think I would say more like 12 by 12. So I don't think we're trying to make it, you know, stay within a certain size. We got free windows, and I think my maybe learning, you know, as you go, we got double paned windows because that's what we found, and they're kind of nice because you can, like, you know, wind them open and close like you do, like, if they're just on your house, but which helps with airflow. However, the double pane, they're very heavy. And then also on some of them, the double pane, you know, it gets all foggy in between and you can't clean in the glass. And so it kind of looks smudgy, you know, when you're looking out, and sometimes it bugs me, but really it's effective. But the heaviness is kind of the thing, you know, we built the greenhouse just sitting like on cement footers. And when you think about how heavy those windows can be building up, and then you're like sitting them, you know, we tried to make sure that we had stability underneath, but it is technically muskeg back there. So.
Oh, that's not on the shot rock.
No.
Uh-huh.
So that part was a little bit sinky. Yeah. So we had to do a little bit of like making sure, you know, Paul uh-huh. filled it in, but still it's,
right.
The shot rock did not extend over there. Which I'm not sure why, but I'm going to blame the previous owners of the house because we didn't put that shot rock in back there. Anyway, it's a little heavy with those double pane windows.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's a combination of double pane. And then I got some single pane and kind of other ones donated to me that I sort of was collecting.
Well, there is a upside that with the foggy windows that it's actually better when you have glass windows for them to be foggy, but
true.
It does for the plant's sake, but it does kind of cut down on the views. So
yeah, I try to just sort of look at it more pragmatically like that.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to come in the greenhouse. And, of course, she's got cucumbers and tomatoes growing and I think it was a sunflower and that. But you're really struck by all the art you've got and the collected things you've got, lighting. It was just really a pleasant area.
Oh, yeah. I know. It's like a kind of a – it's a really nice place to be, which is – probably half the reason I like having it. But yeah, I have my mom used to do a bunch of stained glass, and she sent stuff up to me, and so I have some of that in there. And also my mom loved gardening and loves gardening, and I think I kind of, you know, grew up around her and flowers, and I like color and all that. So I kind of like that my mom's stuff is in there too.
Yeah.
And then some of her artwork that she's painted for me, because like she knowing it's going to go in the greenhouse, because she loves that. So I like that. And then and yeah, I just collect a lot of you know, I work on the forest, so I'm able to, you know, be boating around a lot. I get a lot of shells and rocks and just, you know, collect, always have a bucket with me and a collection, and that ends up kind of coming back and building up in the greenhouse and around it and around my bed. So yeah, that's
that was really nice to see all of your treasures and they're nicely arranged. And
oh, thanks. Yeah, I like to I kind of remember, oh, that rock is from this beach, from this from this trip that I did. And I don't always remember the years, but I kind of remember you know, what beach it came from and who I was with. And
yes, we always have a slight disagreement while we're on vacation of how many rocks I can bring home.
Yeah. Well, I know there's plenty of times I've come home from trips and Paul's had to help me haul things up. Or like a pilot will raise his eyebrow at me, like, what do you have in this backpack? But yeah, it's we live in a really beautiful place in the sense that even if you're not boating around or flying around all over, we still live in our island. And if you can get out and, you know, there's things to collect, you know, that we have naturally around here, that we can make such natural like landscaping in our house.
Yeah.
So nice.
So in addition to the visual effects of your greenhouse, it was a factory. You've got lemon thyme growing that you've had for years, I understand?
Oh, well, I've tried to overwinter it, but I just can't seem to, like, I don't know what happens. I either, like, just it gets too dried out or whatever, and it's died. So I usually end up just getting a new plant every spring, and I have a couple friends who also love it, so I grab some for all of us. But do you have any recommendations for how to overwinter the lemon thyme?
I've never overwintered lemon thyme, but I do overwinter thyme that I have in a ceramic pot, and I put it with other pots in between my raised beds, and then so it forms a insulation around them, and then I cover it with mulch.
Okay.
And, you know, if I have extra sacks of dirt or anything, I put them around the end just to make sure there's like a foot and a half of insulation on all sides of the plants I'm trying to overwinter. It doesn't always work, but...
Right. You know. Well, I'll try that this year, because I have those two, you know, pots, and I have those beds that are kind of close together, and then I have... I could maybe try something there.
Right, and they get wet and they get snowed on
and
all of that, but they should be okay.
Okay, yeah, I'll try that.
So I think what helps is a lot of things that kills plants overwintering is when we get in February where it's really cold one day, below freezing, and the next day the sun comes out and things wake up, and it's that back and forth that we get a lot of in our springs that is hard on the plants.
Okay.
And just having them insulated just takes away all that temperature extremes that we experience. And it seems to help. I mean, you have to expect some die-off when you're going to try and keep things outside, but it's always worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the fun thing is to, when you take that mulch off in the spring and you see little sprouts and it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, how'd that happen?
Yeah. So really nice. And some of the things you had that you like in your greenhouse was the sun gold tomatoes were doing really well, and the you have a type of cucumber called a mini munch.
Oh yeah, I had a couple different kind of cucumbers, and that mini munch from Territorial Seed ended up being a good variety for me. It has a like really tender skin, so. I mean, I have this other kind that is a little bit more spiky with a tougher skin, which is still delicious, but I really like that mini munch that had the kind of thinner skin kind of more like an English cucumber, I guess, that you think of. But they were like a perfect size. I got many of them from just, I think, two plants. I mean, I don't think not enough to make like pickles and stuff. But if you were to like have, I mean, you could make pickles, but if you wanted like many jars, I would have maybe like at least four of those plants. But yeah, they did pretty good.
So that's one of the things that you, the tomatoes and cukes, you started from seeds. And
I did, yeah.
You started a number of things that you have from seed. How do you start your seeds?
Well, I use leftover, the little black, 2 and 4 inch black little plant containers that you get from, like, the flower farm or downtown. And I use organic soil. I don't really like that seed starting soil because it's like dry and doesn't absorb the water. It's just kind of weird. It floats.
Well, you have to let it soak first because it's so maybe old or something. But
yeah,
it's hard to rehydrate the moss.
It's really frustrating. So I kind of just blow that off, and I do, which maybe is the best. But I just use some of the black gold, and I got these heated mats the last few years, which I only have a couple, and I put cookie sheets down, and then I fill my soil little containers up, and then I just label the containers with what I plant, and then keep them on those heated mats in the like in April I'll start, because I don't really have room in my house to start things, so I have to use the greenhouse. So these heated mats are kind of handy. And I can, and then I have these like clear totes, and for even though it's already in the greenhouse, I like put the totes over the seeds, the seedlings, or the little containers, just for that, even that like it's like 10 extra degrees that you get out of it that way. And so I get a little jump start that way. And I did learn some things from you, Deb, talking about sprouting seeds, like nasturtiums, because I was having trouble with my nasturtium seeds. Even though they were brand new seeds this year, they didn't all, germinated. And it's and I usually don't have that much of a problem, but these ones gave me trouble. And so I was thinking next year I'm going to try to put them on, like you were saying, wet paper towels.
Uh-huh.
And soak them or just put them on the wet
paper? Just put them on the wet paper towels.
Mm-hmm.
And they could take a week, 10 days to sprout. But then you at least know that those are sprouted. You don't want to let them get too big before you plant them. But once they sprout, then you can...
Yeah, you see they're viable.
Yeah.
And then you just put them in where you normally would have planted
them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you need to, like, if I started them inside but put them out in that covered little... my little setup, I don't need to like worry about temperature change of where I sprout, or should I sprout them outside too?
Oh, no, you don't need to worry about that so much.
Okay.
But nasturtiums don't like to freeze though, so
You
have to keep them above freezing.
Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah, so I'll probably do that next year just because I was having such a hard time. But yeah, that's pretty much how I do it. And then, as things... sprout and germinate, then I kind of like move those out into the greater greenhouse, and I have an oscillating fan in the greenhouse so that the seedlings have a strength to their stems when they're getting that wind on them. And then maybe I'll start a new batch of other seeds in the next, after those like get moved out to the main. So yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So moving out into the garden, you had potatoes and a really nice trellis of, and you like the cascade peas rather than the sugar snaps because of they don't get so tall.
Yeah. I always got these like super sugar snap peas that from Territorial, and they would be so tall and giant, and then they would just like even though I had a trellis, they would just crack over, and I would get so mad. My friend Emil had these Cascadia peas, so I started getting those, and they just are still just a very, they're not maybe as giant, heatly huge of a pea, but they're still very good, and just fine, and they only get, 5 feet or something like that? They were not even 4 feet.
Yeah.
4 feet.
But they were real bushy and filled in your whole trellis.
Yeah. They did really good this year, which I was happy about because I was like, they had a slow start.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a cool spring. Yeah. It was a slow start for lots of things.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the really impressive things you had was a really nice raspberry patch, and and I can attest that the raspberries are delicious. Delicious. And that, and so we're getting on to fall now. What are you gonna? What kind of care do you have to give to your raspberry plants here in the fall?
Well, I am going to kind of prune them down. I'm going to cut back the canes that we're producing this year, and then you know there's all this new these new green shoots that came out. So I'll leave those, but I'll prune them so that the stems are kind of not crowded each other. They have some space in between them, and then I'll cut them off at the top at about 5 feet where they're not, like, towering way high. I'll clear all that out to, air, you know, get it ready. And then if I get it together, I will maybe get some seaweed. And, you know, we have there's always that fundraiser in the fall.
Right.
So that's always nice to get the seaweed fundraiser. So sometimes I get that, but sometimes I get my own. And sometimes I don't bother because I just don't want to deal with it. but then I put the seaweed down and, you know, hope that helps. But that's it. And then in the spring, I, you know, fertilize it, weed it, because there's always seems to be weeds that grow even in the winter.
Yeah, there are. And try and keep the porcupines out.
Yeah, mine got slammed 1 year, and it ruined them for 2 years. And I know some other friends who have gotten theirs slammed, and I just was really surprised. And I didn't know for sure that it was a porcupine when it first happened, but then the next night I saw him waddling across the road. And
yeah. Well, I mean, part of gardening here is to protect it from everybody else who thinks it's their dinner also.
Oh, my gosh, I know. We've got a lot of that. We got a lot of deer, slugs, porcupines.
Yeah.
That's the bane of our existence in our gardens. I think all of us in Petersburg and Southeast are.
And birds, they always come and pull up all the carrot seeds or whatever.
Yes, they have. There was a couple that got me a couple years ago. There was a, you know.
Yeah.
Figured it out.
It's always a challenge.
Yeah.
So a common theme when we talk to people about their gardens and their lawns and that is they always tell us, I got this plant from so-and-so and that. And it's something that we are trying to encourage, just that if you get plants from somebody else, they're going to be ones that do well here because they've survived. They're going to be a little bit acclimatized to our climate and the cost. I mean, we're definitely dealing here in Petersburg, and I'm really almost glad that we're not in the business anymore because freight on plants is really shot up. It's more than doubled in the last 4 years, and you know, it's just making it really expensively prohibitive to do the things that we want. And sharing out plants is really a nice thing, and everybody always remembers who they got it from and where it came from. And you've gotten some of those from your raspberries.
Oh, yeah. I have some. My friend Jane gave me some of her raspberries, and so about half of my patch is from the ones, you know, starting from a plant she gave me, but then I've, like, gradually expanded it. And then I got a couple raspberry plants from my friend in Thorn Bay. He brought them over on a boat because we were going to work together, and he was talking about his raspberry plants, and man, those have really done well. I love sharing plants with my friends, getting them from friends. I really love the plant swap and the seed swap that you guys and that the market and others have been promoting. I think it's wonderful. I have a lot of flowers and plants, and I know, exactly who they came from. and it's pretty fun. And it's fun to, you know, give away flowers and plants, especially if you have flowers to cut and give away when people are going through a hard time or just to celebrate somebody. I mean, it's a... a really nice way to spread it, you know, just color, the color in
right
around.
And also, I mean, everybody appreciates a few fresh peas or tomatoes if you have them, or, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And at the market in the past, we've had people share a lot of nice produce, tomatillos, kale, zucchini. And even if you only have one or two, well, zucchini, that's enough.
Yeah. And it's great, those
That's been another half hour in the garden, and I really want to thank everybody for listening, and for Gina to be on and sharing her garden experiences, and hopefully you're enjoying your garden.
And if you'd like to be on In the Garden, let us know.
Support for this program comes from Petersburg Flower Farm, with delivery of fresh bouquets available. Open noon to 5, Friday through Sunday at 6 Rory's Road. More information at 907-518-4363 or Petersburg Flower Farm on Facebook.